Don't be afraid of a good ass kicking. There was some grandmaster said, you don't learn anything when you win the game of chess. You only learn when you lose. So that really stuck with me, you know, put the spin on what it means to lose or to be in a deficit, to not feel good.
My guest this week is drummer Ray Levere, whose extensive career spans live performances, teaching, and composing for top TV networks like TLC, Discovery, and Fox Sports, among others. In addition to his performance career, Ray is a dedicated teacher and clinician for manufacturers like Yamaha, Pasty, and Evans. Despite a devastating fire accident at age 12 that left him with severe burns and the loss of most of his fingers, Ray was able to devise unique ways to not only continue drumming, but to excel at it. His new book, Drumming in Flow, emphasizes the importance of breathing techniques and aims to help drummers consistently achieve a state of relaxation, focus, and peak performance. I spoke with Ray via Zoom from a studio near Manhattan. Why do drummers need breathing techniques?
Well, it's not just drummers. It's kind of anybody that's in a body can benefit from breathing. Early on, I decided that I wanted to make music a career and become a pro drummer. And I was going to do everything it took to get down that road. But I noticed the biggest problem I had was me and getting out of my own way. I was always very kind of nervous and anxious about things and kind of cared too much, I guess. And you get in that situation where you're just overanalyzing everything. So I knew at certain points of my career and my practicing that you have these moments of flow where you just, things just seem to be happening on their own almost, and you're just kind of along for the ride. That was something that was very intriguing to me and frustrating at the same time. And I was like, well, why can't this happen more? And what is that state that you go into that, you know, athletes call being in the zone? And so I just kind of, this book is, you know, is the outpouring of all these questions that I had. And, you know, I wanted to do something with a drum book, but I just felt like there was too much good stuff out there already for drum books. And if I did a drum book, you know, I wanted to do something that would be in addition to helping drummers on a different level. So it's more of a holistic approach to how to go about learning skills faster and how to calm yourself down and get into the zone more. And breathing is really the anchor and the vehicle that I'm using in the book to get to that process of calming the thinking mind down. And because really, from what I've read, is that when you're in a flow state, you're really not thinking. Your mind is almost offline, and it's a mind-body connection synergy that just kind of takes you for the ride. That was my experience with it anyway. So I noticed through the breathing techniques, when I started really incorporating these into my own life, that they really helped me calm down and quiet my mind. And so that's why I wanted to merge the thing that I love the most in life is drumming and music, and wanted to somehow enhance that for myself. So
there's a lot of meditation in this then.
There's not a lot. There's a section that talks about meditation and the science of meditation. And meditation can be very esoteric and it's thousands of years old. But I was more interested in, like, what does it do to your body? You know, how does it calm you down? And what does it do to your brain when you meditate? And I am no expert by any means on any of this stuff. It's really just my own personal interest in trying to get further down into figuring out who I am as a person and how I function on and off the bandstand as a musician and a person in life. And so I'm interested in bits of information that can really, that you can chew on and be like, oh, if I do this, I get this, you know? So that's kind of what helps me. And that's how my brain works. So, you know, they've done studies with meditation where just even 5 minutes of meditation changes the patterns in your brain dramatically for the good. So, you know, that's a good thing when we're trying to
Yeah. Okay. Let me ask you a question then. Do you find yourself meditating before you play?
I try to incorporate these things, and really part of this writing this book was to really, put the medicine where the mouth is and just, really use these techniques. And sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, but I try to, and it's like, for me, meditation is, I kind of had this epiphany of like, wow, meditation is about, for me, it's coming back. It's like, okay, sit in a chair and don't think about anything. Whoops, I just thought about something. All right, well, let's come back to emptiness. So it's like that's the proverbial lifting the weights. That's one set of like, whoops, I lost myself. Now let's come back for another set of emptiness. And whoops, we lost ourselves again. So we keep coming back. So you're training the brain to come back and not fly off into a story or, any type of frustration or anything that leads us away from who we are internally. And I think the more we can keep our eye on the pulse internally, the more we can have intuition as to which direction we're supposed to go next.
I think that's a problem that beginners have with meditation, and that it's hard to empty your mind for long periods of time. So then the inclination is, I'm doing this wrong. I must suck at it.
Yep. That's what a lot of people, including myself, think. And, like I said, 5 minutes of meditation does wonders for the neural pathways in the brain and the body. And so you don't need to sit there, like a yogi for hours at a time and keep your mind empty. And, we go back to judging. That's more of thinking mind. The mind comes in and says, you're not doing this right. You should be doing it. And, yada, yada. And it's more taking, more going down the wrong road. And so again, it's coming back. It's dropping whatever we're thinking about and coming back to emptiness. But yeah, a lot of people, including myself, that the mind just does its thing. As it's on a recording loop, an incessant nonstop loop that I have something to say here. And, and at this juncture, I have something else to say. And it just goes on and on because that's what the thinking mind does. And, we're taught to think that thinking is good and thinking is good. And thinking, is what we need to do in life to accomplish anything. But there becomes a point of diminishing returns where you can't think your way out of some situations. And thinking just, gets you more confused. And I think with music and art in general, that's what makes art and music so powerful, is that it's not about thinking your way into things. It's trusting the unknown and the emptiness, the space that is void of anything. And we're going to try to fill that up with something creative. And that can be a scary zone for a lot of people. So that's the beauty, that's the double-edged sword of being an artist and musician, I guess, is that, if you're a 9-to-5er and you go to a bank job, you're not forced in those situations. You're just kind of punching the numbers.
Let's talk about your background for a little bit. You obviously have a strong mind because you had a lot to overcome to become a musician. So let's talk about that for a second, because I think that could be inspirational for some people.
You find yourself in a situation, everything's going along 12 years of your life, and then at 12 years old, you get caught in a fire and you find yourself in a burn unit fighting for your life. I was burned over 65% of my body from my belly button up. And so basically, I spent the next 6 months of the unburned skin on my legs, whereas where they grafted and took skin, the healthy skin, and put it on my upper part of my body that didn't have any skin anymore. So that was a daily, painful, torturous process. So the one thing that I kept thinking about were the drums. And I just started playing the drums. I knew my one rock beat, which is just booch, kick, booch, kick, very simple. One and three on the kick drum and two and four on the snare drum and hi-hats playing eighth notes. And that's all I could play. And I was happy as a pig in poop doing that. And next thing I know, I'm in a burn unit and I'm thinking about that groove all the time. And I'm thinking about it and thinking about it. And it gave me solace, and it gave me a sense of comfort, and it took me out of my situation of pain. And it became a positive thing for me. And I remember my mother at one time during a visit, I was in pain, and she said, "Well, think healing thoughts." And that got me down the road of thinking like, well, what do I like? And so I drumming in that one groove kept coming back to me, and I kept thinking of a certain dog that I wanted. And my mom was like, "All right, when we get out of the hospital,
we're going to get you that dog."
So I just kept thinking about these positive things, and the drumming became this positive influence in my mind. And so when I got out of the hospital, my father, who was just calling me now, said, "We're going to get you that drum set." And so lo and behold, the day came where I got out of the burn unit and got home, and I got healthy enough. And my dad, you know, kept his promise and took me to the music store and got me a drum set. So that was an amazing day, and I'll never forget it. And so the drums became this thing that just helped me lift myself up positively and mentally and physically. And, you know, I would like to tell you that I had this grand design of what I wanted to do with my life, but honestly, I didn't have a clue of what I wanted to do with my life. And I was graduating high school, you know, some years later, and, you know, all my peers were talking about what they wanted to do, and I'm going to go to this school and that school. And I was like, well, gee, I don't really have any plans, you know? And so that bothered me that I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life at 18 years old. And I knew that I loved the drums, but I never thought about it as a career until that moment. And I was like, well, maybe I can be a professional drummer. Maybe I can find a drum teacher to teach me all the different styles and everything I need to know. And if I practice really hard, I might have a shot at being a career drummer. So that's the path I chose. You know, many years later, here I am, still practicing every day, and, you know, it never ends. But the drums from day one have really been there to just empower me. That was all I knew, that the drums empowered me, and that's what I went with, and that's what's kept me, you know, going at it for so many years.
How did you manage to hold the drumsticks?
Well, my right hand, I lost most of my digits on my left hand, and my right hand has limited mobility, but most of the digits. So I could hold the drumstick right out of the gate after the accident with the right hand. And the left hand didn't have any digits that could actually grab onto a stick. So what I did was when I first got reintroduced to the drums again, I would kind of just go off the hi-hat to the snare drum with the right hand and just play with one hand. Then I thought about, well, let me just duct tape the stick to my left hand. So I would pad up my hand and duct tape it. And it was just, you know, at that time I had no inclinations of anything. I just wanted to see if I can play the drums. And so that duct taping the stick turned into, let's get like a, I think I had this practice glove. It was like a, looked like a Kung Fu padded boxing glove or something, but not like a big boxing glove, but so it had a padded back to it. And I would duct tape the stick to that. And then I would stick my hand in and out of this glove. And it had a little piece of Velcro to hold that on my wrist. That was like the next big step in how I held the drumstick with my left hand. And I started playing in bands and was gigging out, and you know, it was going fine. And then my drum teacher at the time, Keith Crane, really dropped a bomb on me one day and said, you know, you seem like you're really into practicing and you want to do this as a career. So maybe you should get surgery done on your left hand. And that kind of scared, the thought of that scared me at the time, because more surgery and what if they mess it up and I can't hold it, you know? So I thought about it and thought about it. And then I decided to get the surgery, and I went up to Boston. They have the Shriners Institute there. So I went into a clinic where I can ask the doctor about what you'd like to have done. And I said, I want to be able to hold a drumstick. And I remember the doctor, he was a chief surgeon, that just said, wow, we don't get requests like that every day. He's like, you got it. We'll do our best to give you some digits on your left hand to be able to hold a drumstick. So I had this, the thumb was actually removed because it was embedded into the palm for, just skin wants to find its closest area to heal next to. And so my hand turned out to be kind of a mitten without anything to, to hold anything there. And so they pulled the thumb out, and that's what gave me this one digit that I actually hold the drumstick with. And I could hold the drumstick after the operation, but if I hit, it would just kind of pop out. So one day I realized, like, well, how am I going to keep this in here? I don't want to use duct tape anymore. So I came up, I saw a rubber band sitting on the table, and I put it through one end of the stick, around the back of my hand, and around the butt end of the stick, and it held it in there quite nicely. And it felt, strangely enough, like, the resistance of the rubber band, it had give and take. So if I let go of the stick, it would kind of feel as if my fingers were loosening up on the stick, which they are, but in limited fashion. And if I grab the stick, the rubber band pulls it back in, and it's when I grab the stick again, it's back in my thumb. So that's been the method that I've used through the years, and it's worked quite wonderfully. And then I found this wig glue that is this really tacky, sticky glue that people use to hold wigs on their head. So I found some of that glue, and I just experimented one day, and I put that on my hand or around the stick, and then put my hand on the stick. And I was like, wow, the stick is super grippy now, which gave me a real sense of confidence in holding this stick firmly. So that was the two punch there that really helped me out between the glue and the rubber band. I was in business, and and then through the years, I've worked things out where, like, if I'm on a jazz gig, I don't need the rubber band because I can, if the stick kind of slowly comes out, I can just in between a beat, I can push it back in real quick, and it's ready to go again. Plus, I'm putting down sticks and picking up brushes, for certain parts of the tune. So it works great. And if I'm playing light rock or funk, I don't need the rubber band. But if I'm full on, just, if I'm going to do a gig where I know I'm going to be hitting hard, and it's got to be a lot of consistency, and I'm going to get a drum solo, and so I just tend to use the rubber band as assurance.
I think it's amazing. You're a great drummer,
Well,
and
thank you.
it's hard enough to become great at something, let alone there's two things here, because you're overcoming something that's physical as well as, learning your craft. So it's not an easy thing. It's not easy to do one of the things, and let alone both.
Well, the craft itself is something that I separated and differentiated between holding the stick. I was like, you know what? After an accident like that, your life becomes very just too pointed. I was like, I didn't die. I'm still alive. My brain functions fine. And I still have hands. I might not have all the digits, but I didn't lose my hands. The fact that I still had hands was just like, I can do this, and I had a sense of confidence, like, with everything I just said there, I was like, nothing's going to stop me except me. And I had this confidence that if I put in the hours, that's all I needed to do. It's like I knew I was smart enough to, and when I say smart enough, I didn't have any natural talent at all, but my smarts were in knowing that I had to put my butt on the seat and not get up and put in the hours and really be humble and listen to what my teachers were telling me, where my weak points were and what I needed to work on. And that's the part of the craft that, is just inseparable from learning anything. As like, if you want to write a book, you got to put your butt to the seat and your fingers to the keyboard, and you got to crunch out so much per day, and you got to keep it in your mind when you're away from it to think about what's the next step, where do I want to go from here. And that's the craft that we all, that's the process that we all need to go down, whether it's writing a book or drumming or cooking. It's putting in the hours and having the discipline, not the motivation, because most days I'm not motivated. Discipline is like, no, get in there, sit down. I know you're not feeling it, but we're going to do this. So, you know, I separated that from my accident. And then on top of it, it's like, wow, I have to deal with these hands, and they're not, you know, I'm definitely, I don't have hands like Buddy Rich, and, you know, but in my mind, I would imagine there's nothing wrong with my hands. And I would listen to drummers like Buddy Rich, Vinnie Caliuta, Steve Gadd, Steve Smith, Dennis Chambers, all these guys that had amazing chops and facility. But not only that, they had amazing groove, and they also understood each genre of music in a way where they would respect the style. So that's the type of drummer that I wanted to be. So I would imagine myself, you know, being in with the likes of those guys, which is like, you know, total fantasy, but it, you know, it part of what has helped me is to have an imagination, a positive imagination of shooting for the moon. And if you hit the top of the mountain, that's okay too, you know? So that was kind of my idea behind studying these guys and trying to get those type of chops. And I think it's worked out, you know, it's helped me to really excel, not thinking in terms of like, well, I'm a guy with limited mobility and I should only think about getting so far. Like, that conversation never came into my mind. It was like, I have hands, so why can't I do what these other guys are doing? You know, and maybe that's some naivety there, but it helped.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is, when you play, you'd never know. You know, you just sound, you sound great. And I've watched you on videos do play in different genres, and it's like, wow, it just sounds like a great drummer to me.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, that's the goal, and that's the proof in the pudding is, if you close your eyes and you hear me play, you wouldn't know anything's wrong with me. And that's really the goal of the accomplishment that I was looking to achieve, is to have that. And, so thank you.
Was there a gig that you did, or did you get a gig with a person, with an artist that you went, okay, I think I've arrived. I think I can do this.
Yeah, that happens on multiple levels throughout my career. That's happened multiple levels. And I think one of the biggest ones was playing with Mike Stern and recording with Mike and hoping that I would just survive, you know. And at the back end of it, Mike, like, was, you know, next time I saw him, he was raving about me, and this guy can swing his butt off and he sounds great. And like, he really genuinely had a great time in the session. And that was like, gosh, you can't ask for any more than that, you know? And then just last year, I had a session with Will Lee and Paul Schaefer from the CBS Orchestra, Oz Noy, who's a guitar sensation. And, it was Fred Lipsius, who was the saxophonist for Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And Fred had some tunes that he had recorded, but had demos of, but never recorded. And so he called Will Lee and asked if Will could put a band together. So out of all the drummers that Will knows, he pulled me on the session. So that unto itself was like, wow. And so now I find myself in the studio with all these heavies, and there's no rehearsal. There's not even tunes. They're just demos. And we're all in the studio, and Fred's got 10 tunes he wants to do that day and one day. And we're all thinking like, wow, this isn't going to happen, you know? And like, so I rehearsed the demos as much as I could and got, you know, the grooves together and, you know, tried to do some foresight into where these might go musically. And I just would try to prepare to the best of my ability, but I still felt rattled because I was like, wow, this, oh man, you know, it's like, there's no rehearsal. So the day comes and we went to Sears Sound Studios in Manhattan. And I'm in this iconic studio with these amazing musicians. And the first song is, we're recording it and it's going pretty good. And I'm nervous. And I look up and I realize like, wow, Paul and Will and Oz, and they don't know the tunes either. Like, nobody had a rehearsal, you know, and I'm just the drummer. I got to play the groove, but, you know, Paul Schaefer's got to think about chords and rhythm within his playing. And, you know, so all these guys have much more on their plate than I do. So that really relaxed me into the situation. And we spent almost 2 hours on the first tune. And all of us are looking at each other like, wow, Fred is just, you know, having illusions here. Like, there's no way we're going to get 10 tunes done. And after the first tune went slow. And after the first tune, everything just like fell into gear. And next thing you know, the end of the session came and we had 10 tunes in the can. And I felt really good about what we did. And everybody seemed happy. And, you know, that's what more can you ask for? You know, so it was that was a real just amazing session for me. And that was one for the books and a feather in my cap and all of the above. And so, and then Randy Brecker, Fred is friends with Randy Brecker. So he asked if Randy would solo on one of the songs. So Randy did that in his home studio and put a solo on one of the tunes. So I got to play with Randy Brecker in a couple different iterations of separateness there.
That's very cool. Definitely. You do a lot of work for television as well, right?
Yeah, that was through our mutual friend, Rich Tozzoli, that I was just getting into Pro Tools and a friend of a friend said, hey, you should call Rich. He's pretty good with Pro Tools. And so I called Rich and he didn't really know me. And he's like, well, I don't really like to teach. But he's like, you're friends with my friend Pete. So sure. So he came up for a few lessons and instantly became really good friends. And then a few years went by and, you know, Rich has been doing this TV cues for many, many years. He's got thousands, hundreds of thousands of cues in his arsenal. So I guess Rich had up to that point had been doing a lot of just drum loops. And I think Rich was, you know, he was impressed by my drumming enough where he was like, you know what, I would love to come over your place and get some real drums on these tracks and instead of these drum loops. So that's what he did. And he came over and we had a great time and we just synergistically worked together really well. And Rich is a total pro. He knows exactly what is needed for these TV cues. And the formula is just A, B, A, B. The first A-B is a little more simplified than the second A-B. And somewhere between A and B or the beginning of the tune, you'll have some type of intro, either a drum groove without anything, or there might be a drum groove in the middle, or we just stop in the middle and you give the editor a break. So he knows how the editors think. So he knows that there's going to be some guy sitting at a control desk scrubbing this 1 minute, 20 second, 30 second song. And Rich is trying to make this guy's job easier through the genre. First of all, it's like, all right, let's be true to the genre. If they want down and dirty blues, we got to give them blues, but it can't be anything complicated. It's got to be something that works great in TV land. And so I learned a lot about that from Rich. And first couple times, you know, I would play these fills that were too complex or too notey for, and he was like, we're dealing with TV land here, you got to water things down, and you want things to kind of explode out of the TV into the listener's ears, and to do that you got to really just make these parts simpler. So that was a real eye-opener for me as well. But yeah, Rich is just super pro and a great songwriter, and you know, he's a great composer and he's doing a lot of great stuff now for movies. And
he told me that you were his secret weapon because most other composers, especially for television, will use loops. And the fact that there's a real live drummer, it makes a big difference because people notice, you know, there's a feel there. They notice.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess they would notice the feel of a real drummer, even if they don't really take it in. They feel something has got some more groove or grit or grease.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so your book is out now?
Yeah, it just came out. It's on Hudson Music, and it's available through their website. And I believe it just came out on Amazon as well a few days ago. It's called Drumming in Flow, and it's designed to, you know, through the what we talked about, through breathing techniques and meditation and neuroscience, to get you out of your thinking mind and into your body more, to anchor you towards a flow state.
Very cool. Okay, last question. So what's the best piece of advice that maybe somebody imparted to you or you learned along the way?
Don't be afraid of a good ass kicking. That, you know, it's like I heard somewhere about, I was really into playing chess at the time, and there was this, some grandmaster said, you don't learn anything when you win the game of chess. You only learn when you lose. So that really stuck with me. And it kind of, you know, put the spin on, you know, what it means to lose, or to be in a deficit, and to not feel good. And like, how am I going to regroup? And again, it's like with the book coming back, meditation is like coming back. So how do I regroup? How do I get back to where I was, to help me along the lines? And it's about staying humble, and it's about being teachable. And if I can't teach you anything, like, well, you're not listening. So there's nothing I can say to you. So I think the most powerful thing that anybody can do is just remain humble, remain open. There's a book that I reference in my book, and it's one of my absolute favorite books. It's by Shunryu Suzuki, who's a Zazen master from Japan. And it's called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And any musician or non-musician should do themselves a favor and check this book out. It's so heavy, and there's so many great quotes in there about not losing the lesson and not putting the, you know, the cart before the horse, and all these great things about just remaining open and remaining teachable. And the beginner's mind is a mind that is open. It's an empty vessel that can be filled. But in the expert's mind, there's not much you can teach an expert. He knows it all, you know? So that's what my takeaway from that book. But it's a really heavy book, and there's a lot of great stuff in there. I highly recommend it. So that's keeping the beginner's mind is another thing that I guess it all relates to everything else I just said there.
Very cool. I think that's a good place to stop.
Thank you so much, Bobby. It's an honor and a pleasure to be on your show, man.
Well, it's my pleasure. This was an excellent conversation. I really enjoyed it. And I know we're going to run into one another again.
Soon. Yeah, I feel that. And I hope that. Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Thanks, Bobby.
Take care, Ray.
God bless, brother.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. You can also learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news, and find out about openings for my latest online classes at bobbyosinski.com. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.